You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Radical Personal Finance, the show dedicated to providing you with the knowledge, skills, insight, and encouragement you need to live a rich and meaningful life now while building a plan for financial freedom in 10 years or less. Today, my guest is Manher Patel. Manher heard me talk on the show about how I admire immigrants to the United States, and I always am interested in their stories. And he said, well, I'm an immigrant, and I've got an interesting story. So after a little back and forth, I invited him on the show. So Manher, welcome to Radical Personal Finance.
Thank you, Joshua, for inviting me.
I've been interested in this, and I think you are originally from India, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So yes, correct.
I'm interested in this because the person that I heard that statistic I've cited on the show before was from where I've said that an immigrant to the United States is four times more likely to become a millionaire than a natural born citizen. And by the way, I have not independently verified that recently. So that could be slightly mistaken. But who I heard that from was an associate of Zig Ziglar years ago. And he used to do this work with Zig, and he was an immigrant from India. I forget his name. I think I want to say it was Krish, something like that, something. But he had arrived from India with $9 in his pocket, and he told the story of how he had arrived from India with $9 in his pocket and gone from there and had done very well. And I'd love to see a review of even the Indian culture, and I'd love to see some of the statistics broken out, because the Indian culture seems to be incredibly productive at building wealth. So welcome to the show. I'm going to pump you with questions today and learn all of your secrets as an Indian immigrant. So let's start with a little bit of your story. Walk us through how you wound up in the United States. So share with us. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So I was born and raised in India, and, you know, I finished my schooling in India. And after I completed my 12th grade in India, I was jokingly, you know, telling my dad, you know, I should go outside of India to study something. And I want to study medicine. So it was very difficult to get admission in India. And the cheapest option was to go to Poland or Russia. So I'm like, oh, Russia sounds good to me. So I went there, new country. I didn't know language or anything. I went there in 2005. And then I stayed there for 6 years in Russia and completed my med school in 2011. So after finishing my med school, there were a lot of challenges back in Russia to cook our own food, as I'm vegetarian. And also, you know, to speak Russian, because you have to learn Russian there because you are living in Russia. So that was another thing which was very crazy back in Russia. And then after I finished my med school, I decided that I want to move to U.S. because of better life and opportunities here in U.S. So I started preparing for my board's exam for U.S. So after I gave my first board exam, I came to U.S. I had visitor visa back from Russia, where I got 10-year visitor visa. So I came back to U.S. to give my first exam I gave in India. Then second exam I came to U.S. to give, because that's the exam you can only give in U.S. Mm-hmm. So during that time, I was also looking for, you know, to find a spouse in U.S. because I want to move to U.S. So fortunately, I was able to find my wife, whom I dated like for 6 months back in time. And then we decided to get married. And then eventually we got married in India in December 2012.
How did you meet her?
I met through matrimonial website. It's called shadi.com. It's specifically for Indian people.
Okay. How do you shadi.com? How do you spell that?
Shadi. Shadi. And it's like match.com.
What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Is that in Hindi? What does it mean?
Yeah, Shadi means wedding in our language.
Okay,
so,
awesome.
Yeah.
that's a great way to meet, it sounds like a perfect way to meet an Indian girl in the United States. So keep going. I was just curious.
Yeah. So after that, you know, everything started, my immigration process and everything. So after my wedding, I moved to U.S. and I've completed my immigration process in U.S. instead of in India, because when somebody apply from U.S., it takes like 1 year to come to U.S., but I already had a visitor visa. So I just came to U.S. and then my wife applied here, everything. And it was very smooth process here. In 6 months, I got my green card. And by that time, it was time to apply for my residency. And it's like not like applying like general job. You know, you have to pay money for each hospital. It costs $25 after 9 hospital you apply. So I applied like 400 hospitals, which cost me more than $7,000 just to apply for my residency. And I wasn't working. And my wife barely started working. So, and it was a huge disappointment because I didn't get any interviews for my residency. And I was like, what I'm going to do? Then I started doing this externship at a physician office. And also I started doing research at University of Illinois in psychiatry, because that was something which interests me. And I was doing this free work for more than 1.5 years and still no way to get residency. So again, I applied for residency next year, which was 2014 now. Again, I did same thing. I wasted more than $7,000 to $8,000, but no luck. And I was tired of working free for physician or the university. So I decided to get a job. And nobody would give a job. That was funny thing. Whenever I apply even for pharmacy technician job, they say you're overqualified. So, so I'm like,
how were you supporting yourself during this time?
No, my wife was supporting me. She was working. She's a nurse. So she was making pretty decent, and we used to live in like 2-bedroom condo in Chicago. And in Chicago, you know, it's $1,000 for 2-bedroom condo. So it's not bad as California, where I live, where I pay 2 times more than that.
Keep going.
Yeah, so I found a job on internet and I moved to California. And then my job. So what happened was, we left my wife's job for $30 there, what she was making there. And we came here for $19 job here. So we moved for $19 job from Chicago to California, and our moving expense was $3,000 to $4,000 or whatever. I said, you know, let's move for better future. And then to transfer my wife's license from state of Illinois to state of California, it took them 4 months. I cannot believe that. My wife went to U.S. school. She has already a license in state of Illinois. Just to transfer the license, it took 4 months. So she was just sitting home for 4 months. Yeah. So there was crazy part in California. And then eventually she got her license, and then she started working too. So then what happened at my work, like there was mostly all our doctors, but who didn't, you know, went through residency because all were looking for some other job opportunities. So we had this specific exam for coding, which I do right now, coding and documentation review for the hospitals. So as soon as you pass the exam, they raise you. So my money went from $19 to $30 in, say, less than 6 months. My salary went up much.
So hold on just one moment to make sure that I understand. So you couldn't gain access to a residency. So you took the exam to be a medical coder, and then you were working on that on the side. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate.
And so this is this a work-from-home thing? I don't know much about medical coding. I've heard people talk about how it can be a great work-from-home opportunity. Tell me, what is medical coding and how does that work?
So medical coding is basically, you know, whenever you go to a physician, right, they treat you, right? For example, they treat you for hypertension or any disease, but you are paid based on what hospital submits to Medicare. So for hypertension, there is specific code, for example, 410 or 420, whatever. So hospital has to submit that code to Medicare or any insurance company to get the reimbursement. So if they don't submit their codes, they don't get the money. So what we do is we generate those codes based on the, you know, documentation of the physician. So we generate, like, in each like coding sheet, we have like 20 to 50 codes depending on what patient have. And based on that, we get reimbursed. Hospital get reimbursed for those things.
So this allowed you to earn some income while you were still looking for a job as a physician to be able to support yourself.
Yes.
Great. All right, keep going.
Yeah. So after that, you know, and my old work was like, you know, I wasn't enjoying there much after 1.5 year of work. So I decided to find another job. And eventually I landed in LA in one of the university here with the same job. But of course, like, the pay was 2 times more than my initial pay. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this job definitely. And so far I joined the job with this year, February. And it's going so far pretty good here. I like the university because of the benefits. And, you know, before I was in corporate setting. But right now I am in hospital settings, so it's much more enjoyable in hospital settings.
And so you're working as a physician now?
No, no, no. I'm not working yet, but I'm working as a document specialist for the hospital. So basically what we do is we review the hospital charts and we try to improve the documentation there.
Got it. Excuse me. I misunderstood. Do you, are you still on the path to be able to use your medical education and licensing?
I don't have a license yet, but yeah, I'm definitely able to use my medical background, because what we do is we review and we try to query physician regarding the specificity of the diagnosis. When we query them, the end result is reimbursement increases in that way for the hospital. So yeah, it's really beneficial for the hospitals to hire us.
Why do you think you haven't been able to get a job as a physician?
Sorry, you were cutting off there, Joshua.
No problem. Why do you think you haven't been able to get a job as a physician?
See, it's highly competitive, and I will give you the statistic. Like last year, there were 26,000 open spots, right? And you can only apply once a year, which is in September, and you know in next year in March. And there were 26,000 open spots, and there were more than 50,000 applicants. And of course, the first preference is U.S. graduates. So who went to school to U.S. medical school, they are the first preference. And then other are the FMGs, which who went to Caribbean for 2 years and 2 years in U.S. And third are us, who are international medical graduate. So definitely, you know, I am on the third number there. So that's why I think it's difficult for me to get in.
Got it. So tell me about the finances of this way, because it sounds like a lot of knocking on doors that haven't opened. I mean, based upon the numbers you were telling me, you're spending, you know, several thousand dollars, $5,000 or $7,000, trying to make all these applications. Did you have money when you moved here to the U.S.?
I definitely didn't have money when I moved, but you know, my wife was supporting me because she started working, right? So she was supporting me in that way, and we were able to save that money because we know that every year in September I have to apply for my residency. So for example, this year I have to apply, but of course I won't be applying that many hospitals. So I just need like $2,000 for this year, which I already saved up for my this year residency application.
And over the last few years, have you been able to build savings, even though you are still struggling to get into the position that you want to be in? Are you back?
Yes, Joshua.
Great. So over the last few years, have you been able to save money while you've also been working towards your medical?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Your voice is cutting off.
Okay. Let me just wait a moment here. Hold on a second. All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. Let's try again. Over the last few years, have you been able to save money while you have been trying to get into a medical physician position, or have you just basically been treading water?
So here is the funny thing. I wasn't able to save anything until I moved to California in 2014, and not in 2014 even I didn't save anything, but in 2015 when I applied for my residency again. You know, I started reading about finance a lot, like all the finance blog and, you know, listening to podcasts. So I was thinking, like, I should learn about tech stuff because it seems interesting and complex. And what I'm supposed to do after I come home from job, I work for 8 hours a day. I am free weekends, and I'm free after I come from home. I just go to gym for 1 hour, cook my food, then still I have 3-4 hours left in my day. So I'm like, okay, let me read like this finance thing. So once I started reading, I learned about 401k. So I started maxing out my 401k. I started in September 2015. So my goal is to put $692.32 each pay period for me and my spouse. So it comes around $3,000 a month. I mean, so $36,000 a year. And if you divide by 26, is 12 months, it should be $3,000 a month. So that's my goal for now.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome. That'd be a great step. And you're working now towards early financial independence. Is that right?
Yes, my goal is that.
And when do you hope to be financially independent?
So here is the thing. In 5 years, I want to at least, you know, accumulate like $500,000 so that if I wish, I cannot work. My wife's job is clinical. So, of course, she loves her job and she wants to keep working. So that's fine. So right now, my goal is to save anywhere between $5,000 to $6,000 a month, which I'm close to $4,000 a month, but which will only get me $348,000 in 5 years if I say compounding is 7%. And I right now have $52,000 invested. So if I increase that to $6,000 a month with my principal of $52,000 based on 7% compounding in 5 years, I would be able to get $586,000 approximately. So I hope to, you know, increase my savings to $6,000 a month so I can get around, yeah, my magical number in 5 years.
How long now have you been in the United States?
3.5 years.
And you've been able to, you don't have any debt, you've been able to save $50,000, and you're now working hard towards 5 years with the goal of having $500,000. Mm-hmm. How much are your monthly living expenses?
My expenses are actually pretty high because I live in California in SoCal, and just my rent is $2,100. So my bed expenses are $3,500 a month.
That's great. Do you think that people from India are more productive at becoming wealthy in the United States than either natural-born U.S. citizens or from other ethnic groups?
I think so, because the thing is, the people who come from India to U.S., they already have their mindset that they have to work hard to make money in U.S., and they work like long hours. Like, you know, I have a couple of friends who have business right now, and they did a minimum wage job for 7 to 8 years, but they did like two or three jobs and saved up money and bought the business in cash. So I know people like that too, who did like crazy work and got business in U.S. in 7 to 8 years by working two, three jobs. So people who come from India are very like, they are like, their mind is already set that they have to work hard because they are going to a new country and they have to make money. So, yeah.
It's been my experience, and I can't prove this with data. It's just been my observations that people from India with the Indian culture tend to be drawn towards starting or running a business of some kind. I haven't found that many of them have wanted to participate in things like the 401k system, investing in large publicly traded companies. Do you think that's true?
Yes, that's definitely true, because I haven't met any Indian so far in my family or anywhere who believes in 401k and who has even a little bit knowledge about 401k. They just believe to have savings as a cash money and then buy some business down the line. That's majority of people Indian believes.
Why do you think that is?
Because I don't know, because it's like sometimes their family has the business or their friends has business, so they want to, you know, copy or replicate them. So they're like, okay, let me save up this much money. Like, for example, okay, let me save $250,000 to buy like $1 million model or something, which would be 20% down payment. And based on that one, I can buy a hotel. So, or any business like Subway or Papa John. So they just want to keep saving. And once they have enough money, they will jump into business.
The stereotype, I don't know if it's true or not, but the stereotype is that there are a few different types of businesses that seem to be dominated by people from India, Indian immigrants. Mm-hmm. A few of them would be like the 7-Elevens. For me, locally, most of my Dunkin' Donuts seem to be run by Indian families. Also hotels, like you mentioned. Do you think do you think the stereotypes are accurate? Are these business, industries dominated by Indians, or do you think it's a miss, or do you think it's inaccurate?
No, definitely true. Dunkin' Donut and hotel business are mainly dominated by Indians. And because I used to live in Chicago before, so I know like majority of Dunkin' in Chicago are owned by Indian, majority of them.
Why do you think that is? What is it about the Indian culture where Indian immigrants to the U.S. are drawn to businesses like Dunkin' Donuts or like running and buying and running hotels?
Yeah, because they think one thing, okay, most of them when they came to U.S. like 20, 30 years back, they weren't that educated. So they are thinking, you know, let me work like very hard for now, 5 to 6 years, you know, save some money and buy business. And once they got one business, they see how much money they can make. So they keep buying more and more. Like I know one person who has like more than 5 Subway with him because he came from India. He's as old as me. He's 28 year old, but he has five subway because he came to US. He's like, I'm not going to study or do anything, you know. So he saved up for a couple of years, got for subway. And once you have one business, whenever there is another business nearby there who want to sell, like, for example, Dunkin', they will offer to the Dunkin' guy or the person who owns the business nearby because it's easier for them to control in that way.
Tell me about, are there any Indian customs surrounding money? For example, I'm thinking of things like lending within the Indian community or things like that. Are there any Indian customs surrounding money that you think would be useful or helpful to the audience of Radical Personal Finance and to think about?
Yeah. Indian do lend the money to each other based on the, you know, so based on the families, they know each other. Like, for example, if somebody knows somebody knows them for a long time, they will give cash money to them. Okay, you need money, take $10,000, for example, but you have to repay me in 1 year. But I don't like the system at all because I don't like the system. But yeah, there is this system which is integral to Indian community in US or anywhere where there are Indians.
Why don't you like the system?
Because I had some bad experience, like lending some money back in days in med school to my friend, and it's very hassle, you know, when they don't repay you on the time and you gotta keep them asking and asking. So from that point, I decided, you know, I won't jump in these kind of things.
So the reason I'm interested in these in this topic is because a lot of times when you get into an ethnic subgroup, there are different systems of accountability. So as I've observed in some systems, in the United States, your credit score in working through the credit reporting agencies is the primary way of establishing somebody's trustworthiness as a borrower. But when you get into an ethnic subgroup where you're getting a loan from somebody to someone else, there's not you don't have that same system. You know, your relative or your friend is not reporting you to the credit reporting agencies as being delinquent on your debt. So what are the mechanisms in when borrowing and when lending money? What are the mechanisms for accountability to make sure that you're being paid back?
So basically, for example, if I want to, like, if you ask money from me and I don't know that well, so you have to find some person who knows me very well, and that person can vouch for you. That's the only way they get the money.
And then if you don't repay, then there's the public shaming, basically. Your reputation within your community group is damaged. Is that accurate?
Yes, accurate.
Okay. What other lessons would you like to share with my audience from looking at the United States and looking at your experience within the context of being an immigrant going on almost 4 years now? What other lessons would you like to share with my audience to help them win with money?
So number one is, like, don't be scared to move, because I moved in Chicago 2 times and I moved in California 2 times because of better job opportunity. And probably by next year, I'm going to again move out of California because it's ridiculous expensive to live here. So number one is, don't be afraid to move and take a new opportunity or job, because it always gives, at least if it doesn't increase your money, it will increase your skills, and which down the line can build money for you, and you will know a lot of people. That's the number one. Number two is, like, study something about finance. It's very easy to put money in 401k. If you're eligible, then traditional IRA, of course, and then Roth IRA or whatever, or just finances. Study online. There is a lot of free material, you know, to get started with, and that's what I did. And I'm very happy this year. I started last year September, but in this year I already had 18,000 in my 401k. It's growing by 12% actually, to tell you the truth. So I'm, like, pretty happy about that. You know, I never imagined that I would be able to save this much money and have this much growth in a short time. So of course, you know, read online, ask family and friends if you don't understand anything. And, you know, sometimes things seem that it won't work out, but it eventually works out in long term. So for example, me, I'm still trying for my physician. This will be my 4th year trying. And if I don't match this year, again, I'm going to try next year. I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep at trying and trying, because that is what I want eventually down the line. So that's what I can tell from my experience.
Have you ever regretted moving from Russia to the United States?
No.
Just because it's easier to be a vegetarian in the United States than Russia, or for other reasons?
No, other reasons. I do have family and friends here, so it's pretty much convenient for me. And my dad, who lives in India, he also wanted that I would settle in US. That's what he wanted for me. So, yeah.
Final question. Do you interact with your financially? Do you interact financially with your family living still in India?
Yeah, I interact with them, but they, of course, they don't know about 401k and, you know, IRA and stuff. So that's not point of our conversation. But yeah, I interact with them in a, like, the way they understand me, you know, like my parents understand me that, hey, I'm saving this much. I'm hoping to save much. And just general numbers, but nothing very detailed because they don't have knowledge about finance in U.S. So.
But let me be more clear. What I meant by interact was, are you sending them money? Are they supporting you? Have you supported them?
Oh,
do you
no.
intend to bring them to the United States? How is your financial relationship between your family at home versus here?
Okay. So normally, yeah, I don't ask money from my parents, but whenever they need, they ask from me. And I send them. So whenever they need, like, but it's not a big amount. It's like $2,000 to $3,000 at a time, once a year, probably. So whenever they ask me that they want to build something there, you know, or do something in our farm, you know, build a fence or something, then I send them money. So it's not a big deal. Yeah. But yeah, in our culture and community, when parents ask you, you cannot deny them. That's the whole thing in our community, Indian culture. You cannot deny to your parents.
Do you think that will you ever try to bring them to the United States, or will they stay in India?
No, definitely. Once I become U.S. citizen, which will be next year, after I become U.S. citizen, I will definitely, you know, apply for them and they can come to U.S. in, I think, it takes 6 to 10 months for them to come from India to here, whole immigration process.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Almost every U.S. immigrant for whom I've done financial planning has those line items on their budget that U.S. Americans don't generally think about, and it's support for family back home. And I really admire that. I really admire the support of parents, the support of extended family. I really admire that immigrant mentality. I find it so lacking in the U.S. American culture, but it also comes with a whole different range of considerations that you have to consider for financial planning, of thinking about how do I prioritize my goals and how do I also care for my family and what are my responsibilities there. Do you think that you'll be able to pass along some of your values to your children, or are you worried about them looking just like all of the other American children around with regard to how they handle money?
So for that, I had been thinking for quite a bit. I don't have children yet, but down the line, once I have, my goal is to take them India every year for their summer vacation. So by the time I hope I'll be financially independent and I can take their whole summer vacation, them to India, so they can learn our culture and things in India, so that then I can, you know, then I can tell them about finance, and then I can teach about finance and things to them. But they have to go outside of U.S. to learn those things. That's what I believe for now. But yeah, you never know.
Well, Manher, this has been great. Anything else that you want to share before we wrap up here?
Yeah, we haven't talked about travel hacking. I do a bunch of travel hacking.
Yeah, tell us what you've learned.
So my credit score is more than 750. For me and my spouse, and I do apply, like, okay, 3 credit cards for me every 3 months and 3 for my wife, so 6 cards every 3 months. So I have been traveling literally for like $22 wherever I want to go in US or even Hawaii, so because I use my points and miles. So yeah, that's the way I travel.
How have you learned about these skills?
Yeah, so before I learned about finance, you know, I was just, as I told you, as I mentioned earlier, I started my job and I had a lot of free time. I mean, you just work 8 hours a day here, right? And then you come home and you have free time. So what are you supposed to do? So I started reading about these travel blogs, and it says, like, hey, if you apply this card, you get 50,000 points, you know, and I'm pretty good at paying my bills on time. I have zero late payment so far in 1.5-2 years. So I'm pretty good with that. So I'm like, okay, let me take the benefit of system. You know, if they allow here, then why not?
That's awesome. And you're not even a citizen of the United States yet, but you can still access the travel hacking system. That's awesome. Anything else that you want to share?
No, that's so far I have, you know, achieved in U.S. So.
Well, I'm excited for your future, and I hope that you'd be able to gain access to a residency program. And I'm sure that if you continue forward, I'm sure that you'll find an opportunity. And I congratulate you on all your progress thus far, taking advantage of the opportunities that you do have in front of you while working towards what you really want to have. And thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your story with my audience to inspire them. And welcome to the United States. May your American dream be rich and fruitful for a very long time.
Thank you, Joshua, so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Radical Personal Finance. If you're interested in building financial freedom for yourself and your family, please subscribe to the podcast with our free mobile app so you don't miss a single episode. Just search the App Store on your mobile device for Radical Personal Finance and download our free app, which also contains an archive of every past episode of the show. If you have received value and financial benefit from the content of today's show, please consider becoming a supporting patron. Radical Personal Finance is listener-supported, and it's your direct financial support which enables me to bring you this content. In addition to your voluntarily paying for the content you've just heard, as a supporting patron, you will receive a number of member-only benefits, including a private Facebook group, access to our weekly Q&A calls, and discounts on future products and services. Details can be found at radicalpersonalfinance.com/patron. Again, radicalpersonalfinance.com/patron.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.